Friends, some people are shocked to speak of death when they are still alive. A lot of time, particularly the young people or those who are in youth and middle ages, they don't want to talk about death. It is something which is considered as evil. Now, what is the purpose of talking about death, about heaven and hell, which are supposed to be states of consciousness after death? What happens? Who has gone on the other side to know what happens? There is a wide gulf between life as we see it and death which is supposed to be. Philosophers have been thinking all about it. The Hindu philosophy particularly has a lot to say. Krishna tells Arjuna, death is certain to all things which are born and rebirth to all mortals. Wherefore, it doth not behove thee to grieve about the inevitable. Elsewhere, in the same book, on page 66, he further states, because you know, there are various ceremonies after death. What is the purpose of the ceremonies? What is the philosophical and the spiritual rationale behind them? Because amongst the Hindus there are profound ceremonies, very long, known as the Shraddha ceremony. Amongst all other religious systems there are ceremonies. The longest ceremony among the Zoroastrians is also there, done at midnight hour from the Vandidad. There may be some rationale, there may not be rationale, we are not able to figure out. There is a book on the book table, Zoroastrian View of Life. And therein, there is a passage from the Ushtavaiti Gatha on the white and the ugly aspects after death of the being about whom Auramazda instructs Zarathustra. Anyway, here is this. Krishna says, I am the beginning and the end of all existing things. I am the origin and the dissolution of the universe, the receptacle and the eternal seed. I am an all-grasping death and immortality. Significant statement, I am a death and immortality, page 66. I am the cause unseen and the visible effect. That means there are two aspects of man, immortal and immortal. The immortal is the higher spiritual triad of Atma, Buddhi, Manas. These three are immortal, eternal. The man that was, that is, and that will not die. You get the point. Around this are woven, this is known as the thread soul or the Sutratma, around which revolve the various pearls of personality on earth. So there are two aspects, individuality and the personality. They are obvious from this writing. Now the Vedas enjoin various ceremonies. See what the Lord says. Those enlightened in the three Vedas offering sacrifices to me and obtain sanctification from drinking the Soma juice, or among the Christians the communion wine, petition me to heaven, thus they may attain the region of Indra. Indra Loka is the theosophical Devakhan or the post-mortem state of heaven, Swarga and so on. Devakhan or Devasthan, the land of the gods. They attain the region of Indra, the prince of celestial beings, and they feast upon the celestial food. That means the spiritual aroma and the spiritual efflorescence, the noble impulses, actions and so on, of the last departed personality on earth, which could not enjoy fulfillment of these aspirations at the higher levels of consciousness get their fulfillment in Devakana, or the Swarga world, or the heaven world. You get the point? That is the celestial food, and are gratified with heavenly enjoyments. Because this postmortem state is bliss, unalloyed, happiness, unlimited, enjoyed by that spiritual trinity, Buddhi, Atma and the higher Manas, in Devakana. All the unfulfilled yearnings of the human soul towards the divine get their fulfillment in this state, a wisely appointed state in nature, says Mr. Judge. But that is an end, because anything that begins in time ends in time. And having enjoyed the spacious heaven for a period in proportion to their merit, sink back into this mortal world where they are born again as soon as the stock of merit is exhausted. All those unfulfilled psychic aspirations at the higher levels get their fulfillment. Ascent, acme, and then again descent and exhausted. The stock of merit is exhausted. Whatever you are not able to do, you have to come back again, because some stock of merit is still remaining behind. Demerit, that has to be fulfilled. So you have got here in your this that post-mortem states are states of transition. Marie Corelli states there is no such thing as death. What seems so is transition. She was a French mystic, writer of several books. One of the books is Thelma. Another book is Life Everlasting. And this mystic had a lot of time and struggled with the Roman Catholic Church of those times, 18th century. And she says it is transition. So heaven and hell are not some geographical locations in time-space. They are states of consciousness which runs through human beings. Therefore, we have to know what man is. And simply stating, man is a composite of spiritual triad and the material quaternary of the physical body, the astral body, life energy, and the passional or the emotional or the egotistic nature of man, desires and passions, kama or kama rupa. This death is a separation of these principles. It is not extinction of life. So we have got life is perpetual, death is only an incident in eternity. It is recorded there in the pamphlet with you. Outwardly, Madame Blavatsky states, we are creatures of but a day, but within we are eternal. That eternal aspect of man has to work through the personality, the lower quaternary. This personality of lower manas, kama rupa, prana, and astral body and the physical body. Whereas the higher trinity is Atma, Buddhi and Manas. Now this Manas is dual in its function, though it is unitary in its structure. This Manas is born from I, and that is the higher Manas reincarnating ego, which goes from life to life. So we have got here the the eternal pilgrim, the Manas, goes from life to life, chained to the previous actions. This pilgrim is the Manas, the thinker, the higher ego. It takes up life to life different personalities, and this Manas is not fully developed. It is partially developed. That portion of it, which is higher, nobler impulses of our life, they will take with it to Devakana. But the lower quaternary, the lower Manas, which is involved in our desires and passions, they are to be left behind. And therefore, those lower, ugly, passional, personal impressions of our last life, bad thoughts, bad words, bad deeds, bad desires, all that is to be left behind. And so the lower quaternary consists of physical body, the astral body, kama rupa, and the lower manas. This has to be left behind in kama loka. Now, having obtained this happiness, we have to come back on earth. What is death? The physicians say death comes when it is cold, pulseless, the blood pressure is zero, the heartbeats have stopped, breathing has stopped. But this is not yet physical death. Not so simple. Even today the physicians are not aware of what the ancient physicians were aware. When the it's pulseless, breathless, the heartbeats have stopped, the electrocardiogram is a straight line, the electroencephalogram of the brain, the vibrations of the brain also they stop. Remember, electromagnetic vibrations are there in the human heart and the human brain. Still the man is not there. He still lives in his inner nature. The breath has stopped, circulation has stopped, but the heat of the body is still retained for a time. And the doctor pronounces death only when rigor mortis appears and when the body cells are not only dead but they are putrefied and they emit a bad odor. You get the point. Now all these things are there in the Isis unveil. At several places we are told that there is an apparent death and there is a real death. Certain yogis have certain powers by which they can control their breath and their circulation. But they are still living and they can be resuscitated from so-called apparent death. Drowning. People can be rescued although they are apparently dead. During sudden cardiac arrest during surgical operations, doctor pronounces death, suddenly there is a revival. These things are spoken of as suspended animation. Now, there are limits to this revival or resuscitation of the corpse, and from page 4, we are told here at various places, some remarkable cases of a suspended animation. Some cases of apparent death are not very infrequently reported in the newspapers. Man is not dead when he is entombed. Death is never sudden. According to Hermes, nothing goes in nature by violent transitions. Everything is gradual. And as it required a long and gradual development to produce a living human being, so time is required to completely withdraw vitality from the carcass. That cannot no more be an absolute end than a birth a real beginning. Birth proves the pre-existence of the being, as death proves immortality, says a Kabbalistic French Kabbalist. So, separation of principles at death. And at death, when the separation of principles, we are told, a resuscitation of the soul and spirit has entirely separated from the body, and the last elective thread is severed, is as impossible as for a disembodied spirit to reincarnate itself once more on this earth. A leaf, once fallen off, does not reattach itself to the branch. The caterpillar becomes a butterfly, but the butterfly does not again return to the ground. Nature closes the door behind all that passes and pushes life forward. Forms pass, thought remains, and does not recall that which it has once exhausted. Certain great beings have been recorded in history of having resuscitated the dead from the tomb. But at what point of time, when the real death occurs and so on, are beautifully listed in these pages from 479 to 485 in the Voices Unveiled, Volume 1. Those who are interested may see it. Astounding information is there, the precise moment of death. And this one passage, if death is absolute, if the organs have not only ceased to act and have lost the susceptibility of renewed action, then the whole universe would have to be thrown into chaos to resuscitate the corpse. The man is not dead when he is cold, stiff, pulseless, breathless. Even if he shows signs of decomposition, he is not dead. That is why we are advised to keep the body for quite some time, 12 hours. But some people do it immediately after death and so on. There have been actual instances in history recorded of people awakened from the grave where they have been entombed. Man is not dead when he is cold, stiff, lifeless. He is not dead when buried, not afterwards, until a certain point is reached. We don't know that point. Physicians do not know that point. That point is when the vital organs have decomposed. And if reanimated, they could not perform their customary functions. When the main spring and cogs of the machine, so to speak, are eaten away by rust, that they would snap upon the turning of the key. Until that point is reached, the astral body may be caused, without miracle, to re-enter its former tabernacle. Either by an effort of the will or the resistless impulse of the will of one who knows the potency of nature and how to direct them. The spark is not extinguished but only latent. This is what death occurs. Then at death what happens? You have a pamphlet, ULT number 25. Take it from the book table. Memory in the dying. And here are the words of the great master. At the last moment, the whole life is reflected in our memory and emerges from all the forgotten nooks and corners, picture after picture, one event after event. The inner man is thinking, the eternal pilgrim is thinking. It is not immediately dead. It is having a post-mortem review of his past terrestrial personality on earth. We have forgotten. Incarnated consciousness has forgotten, but the memory lingers in the higher reincarnating ego or the higher manas, which is one with Atma Buddhi. Because it is not of the earth, earthly, but is the incarnation of the Manasaputras, mind-born sons of Brahma. Mind is a distinct entity, apart from the human mind, which we know as mind, the intellectual function. That is the lower manas, influenced by the physical brain of which is a vehicle. And the lower manas influenced by the fumes which come from our karmic nature more than the faultless reception of divine revelations. Therefore, manas is dual. That is the important psychological point which physicians do not know. Because they deny consciousness after death. Materialists deny consciousness after death. Consciousness survives. The ego is ever wakeful. There is no such thing as death. There are stages of transition of life which is eternal in the infinities of space and time. Now, the dying brain dislodges memory with a strong supreme impulse. And memory restores faithfully every impression that has been interested during the period of brain activity. Whole memory is revived. That impression and thought which was strongest becomes the most vivid and survives all the rest, which now vanish and disappear forever, but to reappear in Devaka. No man dies insane. No man dies unconscious or in coma. Even a man in deep coma physicians call it deep coma, he lives the things on the inner planes, not the physical brain, but in the inner of which it is very conscious. Even a madman or in a fit of delirium tremens will have an instant of perfect lucidity at the moment of death. From the last pulsation and between the last throbbing of his heart and the moment when the last throb of animal heat leaves the body, the brain thinks, the ego lives. In these few brief moments, his whole life over again. These are instructions to those who are at the death side of the entity. Speak in whispers. He who assists at the deathbed and find yourself in the solemn presence of death. Especially have you to keep quiet just after death has laid her clammy icy hand upon the body. Speak in whispers, I say, lest you disturb the quiet ripple of thought and hinder the busy work of the past, casting its reflection upon the veil of the future. These are instructions for those who are at the death side. There was a story of a student has read a small booklet written by a John Gunther, whose only son died of brain tumor. And the agony of the father and the mother was expressed in that small booklet. The title of the booklet is Death, Be Not Proud. O death, where is thy sting? O life, where is thy mercy? That book is very excellent. Student then is immediately after his graduation. Now, therefore, one thing is clear. Death is not the end of life, but the beginning of a new life. And we have got here, death is not the end of life. Death is not dying. It is waking into another life. Upanishad. Death is but a new birth. And the spirit is immortal. Thus humanity can never die. For destroyer Shiva Rudra has become the creator. Isis Unveiled, Volume 2. Life, death, rebirth, eternal cycle, the eternal pilgrim going in eternity through a series of reincarnations and metempsychosis from the beginning to the end till the manas becomes fully conscious and merges with Atma Buddhi, as it happens in a state of samadhi or meditation. Now, the physical body is died, the astral body, the prana. Normally it is said that prana leaves the body. Prana is the life energy from the jiva, the ocean of life. A crystallized, concrete aspect in a unit of life. That prana, the body leaves prana in actuality. The prana does not leave the body. And then prana becomes jiva. It does not go to jiva, it becomes jiva. And the lower manas, kama rupa, and the astral body form a rupa, a form, an astral shell. These are the slough of the last personality on earth. All the evil impulses, impassions, desires, they slough off. They cannot form the part of the reincarnating ego to be taken to Devakana. They will disintegrate. The sooner the better. There are certain ceremonies which may help the speedy disintegration of this astral shell into its constituent component called lives or skandhas. So the lower skandhas disintegrate and they undergo a cycle of metempsychosis in the kamalokic plane or the purgatory of the Christians. So all that is bad is sloughed off, does not form part of the reincarnating ego and Atma Buddhi. These ultimately die and become psychic germs. They undergo the psychosis in the lower kingdoms. So they strengthen the lower kingdoms. They are a part which can be galvanized into activity by mediumistic practices, which is not advocated by theosophy. This is the lower plane of the astral, the psychic sphere, the astral life. When these are exhausted and disintegrated, then the ego goes into Devakan, Atma, Buddhi and higher manas. There it enjoys the bliss. It is called the abode of bliss. It is called the land of the gods, the garden of God. It enjoys this heaven for a number of years, approximately 1,000 to 1,000 years, 1,500 years. When that merit of stock of merit is exhausted, the ego sinks back to life. So between this postmortem state of Devakan or heaven world and the rebirth, there is a small state of consciousness post-Devakhani. And there it has a review, not as the last personality on earth, but as an eternal monad, Atma, Buddhi and higher manas. Eternal pilgrim, a part of which was the personality last lived. But there have been a ring of personalities, a string of personalities anterior to this last life. It has the review of all those personalities on which it has passed through from the beginning to the end of this manvantric cycle. Can you believe it? As the sutratma or the thread soul, all the memories spring back, because memories inheres in the higher manas and in buddhi, the accumulated wisdom of the ages, the accumulated experiences of our past lives. The reincarnation is a sublime fact of life. It will give you hope. This is called the doctrine of hope. Karma, the doctrine of responsibility, moral retribution, ethical causation. Karma runs through all this. Ceremonies may be made or not made, whatever the mode of death may be, sudden, gradual or violent, natural or accidental or premature, we cannot judge. But the law of karma runs through. Our thoughts come back to us. Our actions come back to us. None other can undo what we have done. Destiny is our own hands. This is one of the important things. People, of course, do all ceremonies. We need not indoctrinate them, it is useless or anything of the sort. But the rationale is provided by theosophy, that you have got the memory of all the past incarnations you have gone through. Could you believe it? It has got the preview of the body in which it is to be born. Antenatal preview on the threshold after death and between rebirths. It enters the maternal womb. And then a new life on earth. Old soul returns in the new body. This is the pilgrimage. This is a travel through, journey through life and death. That is why death loses a sting when we see the rationale of it, a necessary state in existence. And here is a mystic, Mohammedan mystic who says, Jalaluddin Rumi, I die as a stone and become a plant. I died as a plant and became an animal. I died as an animal, became a man. I die as a man to give birth to an angel. When did I grow less by dying? It's the natural state of consciousness of the eternal pilgrim, which is birthless, deathless. Therefore, life and death and rebirth are states of transition, subjective, transcendental, idealized continuation of our last personality on earth. When manas is fully developed and integrated with buddhi and united, then atma buddhi manas has the knowledge of the entire memories of all the personalities on earth, what in technical terms is called Sam-Sambuddha, which Lord Buddha had. Because the eternal pilgrim has the memory of his past incarnations. Jataka tales on the book table is there, you can read all the past incarnations of Lord Buddha, evolution as far as the physical realms are concerned, from the mineral to the vegetable to the animal to the human, and the various states of transitions. If a life is a spiral, a rising spiral, ascending, descending, but ever on the ascent, a progressive stages of awakening to a higher levels of consciousness and a deeper states of perception, to gradual accretion of our higher manas to buddhi, life after life, life after life, till become a glorified Dhyan Chohar. We grow out of this chrysalis of flesh and matter to become a glorified Dhyan Chohan, a God-like being, but not God as a personal entity, but the God as a creative force in nature, becoming a part of the entire aggregate of divine hierarchies in the cosmos, which our body is constituted. Theosophy does not believe in a personal God, but in a creative powers or forces of nature, collectivity of creative powers and forces of nature, collectively called the Dhyan Chohars, vehicles of light and of compassion. And we graduate out of life to become a Jivan Mukta, as you say, but still remaining on earth, renouncing nirvana to remain on earth to help on suffering mankind. That is a theosophical ideal of a bodhisattva. Not to gain moksha or mukti or liberation, but to renounce it to become a part of nature in a cyclic task of cosmic evolution. Become a part and a parcel. They are the forerunners of evolution to come. And they are the last to re-enter into the unmanifested logos, to re-emerge at the beginning of the new Mahamanvantra. Such is the immense scope of evolution before our mental eye. Something unheard of in the annals of literature, spiritual, which Madame Blavatsky has given in these two volumes of Isis and Veil and the Secret Doctrine. Now, see, on the second page, we are told, it is by dying that we are born into eternal life, Saint Francis of Assisi. The ego awakening from the state of Devakan has a prospective vision of the next life, which awaits him, and realizes all the causes of the past life that have led to it. Between Devakan and rebirth, the ego regains its full manasic consciousness. The golden thread, the Sutratma, sees all its pearls and misses not one of them. And finally, Sir Thomas Brown, an English physician of 18th century England, Sir Thomas Brown had written a book on the Christian way of life. And his pupil and disciple was Sir William Osler, one of the great physicians of 18th century England. Today's physicians are a poor caricature of these ancient philosopher-physicians. They were called philosopher-physicians. As Albert Einstein has said, philosophy is the root of all science and art. Albert Einstein. Plato, philosophy is the root of all sciences. And any science is always based on the philosophy of life and living. You cannot separate your professional life from your life as a whole. Therefore, the physician becomes a healer In the sense, he becomes the instrument in nature which is healing. So some doctors have a caption, they move out with a caption. I treat, he cures. You must have seen somewhere. I mean, there is sense in this. But we take pride that we cure. No, we are only instruments in the hands of nature, which is a healing force. Vix medicatrix naturae of Paracelsus, the great occultist of the 15th century, who was murdered and was called a medical quack. There is a book written by Farooq Hudwadia of Breach Candy Hospital on medicine and history of mankind. The fourth book, from the right ancient Arabic medicine and ancient Ayurveda and Sushruta and Charaka up to the modern. And when you read it, you transpose yourself to the other anterior generations of physicians who were superb. And then you can say what real medicine is. Such a book, History of Medicine, of such magnitude, the student has not read. But it gives you the whole history of evolution of medical thought, from times immemorial up to the modern. It's interesting, it's a bulky book, but it thrills when we read it. So, this Sir Thomas Brown, we will end. We are men and we know not how. There is something in us that can be without us and will be after us. Now, where does the physician know all this? Unless it's the inner voice that speaks to the ready incarnated manas. It has to be ready. Then the brain becomes porous to the recollections of the soul. And this is the voice of the soul speaking to the mind. Though it is strange that it had no history, what it was before us, nor cannot tell how it entered in us. See how it entered in us. There is surely a piece of divinity in us, something that was before the elements and owes no homage unto the sun. The voice of a physician was awakened and aware of the divine spiritual essence within his corporeal frame and lived his life. You read the life of Osler and this, and you will see that inspiring thought. Now, friends, we have 10 minutes or 12 minutes for questions. Lots of things to be said. That means you separate the bad from the good, huh? The grain from the chaff, the refuse from the flour. Bad elements, let them decompose. Don't animate them by artificial means. This happens in necromantic practices. This happens in seance rooms. They are bad. People want to die and they want to communicate with the dead. It's a whole different area into which we will not now go. But once the higher trinity is separate in Devakhan, you cannot communicate with the higher entity. You are only communicating with the departed astral shell, which has been galvanized into factitious life by beings on earth, by mediums and by other necromantic practices. Don't meddle in it. It is highly dangerous for the survivors on earth. Yes, so what is the question? These are all beliefs that our departed souls come and visit us and so on. Now, let us be very clear. If you read Dastuji Khurshed Dabu's on Zoroastrian religion, he quotes some passages which from the Gathas that reincarnation is implied, though not explicit. The student has not brought it over here. In many religions, there is no explicit statement of reincarnation, but it is implied in the Vandidad. Read Zoroastrian Way of Life, and in the chapter on psychology of Zoroastrianism, the author is writing about what happens after death. The ugly creature and the beautiful angel, and the dialogue, you get the point. Now, Eras Tarapurwala's gathas, if you study them, there are certain indications of reincarnation, though not explicit. There are many. Ilmek Shnum, Beramji Shroff, definitely mentions about his reincarnation. I have heard many, some of the dastus mention reincarnation, though not in public. Some of the Zoroastrian priests who are very enlightened have told me that only the first 4 days are essential. The rest of the days are not essential for my ceremonies after death, except perhaps the year after death. These are all individual opinions, but enlightened mobbes have spoken privately. It gives satisfaction to the person surviving. But if you have knowledge of the right type, then probably all these individual opinions, and we are given the whole journey of the soul. When we say that we are crossing the Chinwad Bridge, it means we are Saros Yazad is taking us to Devakam through the gap of Kamaloka, which is differently termed in Zoroastrian theology. Garotman based is equivalent to Devakam. About Kamaloka, I don't know. I made a study some time back, I have forgotten it. But there are equivalent terms in all philosophies. Among the Egyptians, it is particularly so. There are 3 cubic feet and 7 cubic feet high wheat in postmortem state. 7 belongs to Devakam and 3 belongs to Devakam and 7 belongs to Kamaloka, Hades, or the limbo. That means threefold man going to the higher state and the fourfold man going into Kamaloka to disintegrate. These are some of the things, they are difficult. Many Zoroastrians of course will refute it, but with an open mind you can study it, consider it, and ultimately, where will you find final answer to anything? I have not gone to the side to know what is there. Rishis and sages and seers have a full view of life. Past, present, future are no barriers. Buddhi, manas, conjoined, can behold the infinite. Past is before them, the future lies before their gaze. They have predicted, prophesied wonderful things. It is the possibility of evolution to convert an average human being into a master of wisdom and of compassion and adept with power over time, space, mind and matter. Then postmortem states are within their gaze. I can't see, you can't see, because we are barriers. Then they are broken up, the reality becomes an obvious evidence. Till then, you have to go by reasoning, trying to lead a holy life, a chaste life, and you will know from within. Sir Thomas Brown never knew about the theosophy or anything. He was a very pious Christian, Roman Catholic, or probably a Protestant, I don't know. But his book is all theosophical. From where has he got it? These are some of the ideas which are there.
Does the kind of life
lived affect the kind of devotion that a person has, or is it same for all? The type of life lived is different for the determines the state of Devakam. Is it the same for all or different of all? Now you see, a state of consciousness on earth is a variable quantity. Sometimes we are in good mood and sometimes we are in bad mood. Sometimes we are highly on the mental plane and sometimes we are highly on the psycho-manasic plane, the lower plane of desires, of passions, being involved in all those multiple distractions of life, no? Who is going to come to hear of death when there is so much of enjoyment? Death, I will become old, then I will see, I will think. After retirement, I will study. And student has seen many people retiring and going to the grave. No time to study. Therefore, the type of life lived is variable. Therefore, the type of experiences in Devakhan are variable. Infinite varieties and grades of Devakhanic experience as infinite varieties and grades of experience on terrestrial bodily plane. Now, if you have a poet, if you are a mystic, if you have been meditating all your life, life of virtue, of altruism, good thoughts, good words, good deeds, good aspirations, then the life of experience of death will be